Good Thursday evening, and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I am the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademark podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network on the web at authorsontheair.com. I am super, super, super excited to share tonight's guest with all of you, the wonderful Lori Foster, who is a New York Times, USA Today, and Publishers Weekly bestselling author of more than 55 titles. She's beloved for her contemporary romance novels revolving around alpha males and the women that they fall for. Lori has been a recipient of the prestigious RT Book Review's Career Achievement Award for series Romantic Fantasy and for Contemporary Romance. And then she also writes these wonderful romantic thrillers, so we're excited about that. Anyway, you can check her out on her website, which right here on this page is LoriFoster.com. And there are other locations you can find her. The connections are all right there, her social media connections. And she has a monthly newsletter, which you can sign up for as well. So you click on that link and enter your email, and you can be signed up for her newsletter and get the best, the quickest word on her new releases and what's going on with her. And let me bring on the show live. Welcome to the show. Welcome to The Librarian.
Thank you so much. It's fun to be here.
I'm super, super excited. I'm like stumbling over more. I'm fangirling on you. It's okay. It's okay. Librarians do that, though. They do that.
Well, and authors love it, so it works out.
That's great. No, I've been reading your books for a long time, back when I was first getting into my adult romance phase after being a young adult librarian so long. And I think Dash Apparel was the first one that I read, so it's been a couple years.
Right.
But, yeah, you've really, really just come out and given us some really great alpha males to swoon over, and I'm excited to talk to you about where you get your inspiration for some of these things. So,
Well, thank you.
Let's talk about, just real quick, were you always a reader when growing up? Was it romance something you came to early?
No, actually, I wasn't much of a reader at all. I was a doodler, so I would always be painting and drawing and sketching. And, you know, I loved acrylics and watercolors and charcoal pencils and chalk, and worked quite a bit with clay. So that was sort of my artistic medium. And married young right out of high school. And, you know, within the next few years, we ended up with three boys. And I never even really thought about writing. I had not really even enjoyed reading much in school. You know, so often the work that they assign is sad. And I'm just not a sad reader. And so, you know, I was married and had all three kids when my sister brought me over a bag of romance novels. And I was just immediately hooked. And, you know, I no sooner started reading them than I wanted to write them. And that's kind of how I got started. But I just love that these wonderful character-driven stories, and they ended happy, you know, so
yes.
It really worked for me.
What do you think it is about that happy ending that, you know, so many people are attracted to? I mean, I know now, right now, with the way the country is and everything else, people are probably just looking for an escape. But what do you think it is about reading a, you know, like you were talking about, just literary fiction versus getting hooked on romance?
Well, I think people are always looking for an escape. You know, life is very real, and you don't get through life without some disappointments and without being hurt a little bit here and there, and it's all about being able to cope and get on with your life and deal with what gets thrown at you. And I'm a big believer in attitude. Positive attitude makes everything better. If you wallow in misery, you will be miserable. If you
Right.
have a positive attitude and you try to look for the good things that are happening in your life and around you, you'll be a much, much happier person. So I've always been a very, very optimistic, upbeat, you know, sunny disposition type of person. Not that I always have a sunny disposition, but I always strive to have one. And, you know, I mean, I would look around. I have three healthy kids. You know, I have a husband. He and I have been together, I think, going on 40 years now. I'm not good with math.
Wow.
You know, so life is, those are huge gifts. And so if you look at those and you're aware of those, you know, then you can be a positive person. So I wanted my entertainment to be the same, you know. And so, you know, when people read romance novels, I don't think it's that it's an escape. I think it's an affirmation. You know,
no,
I don't think
that's
trying
a good way
to escape the real world. Yeah, you're not escaping the real world. People in romance novels, people have problems. They overcome them, and they end up happy. That's what we want in life. That's what usually happens in life. Regardless of what gets thrown at you, you power through it. You know, we're a resilient animal, and so you power through it, and you find a way to be happy. And I think it's just an affirmation for that.
I like that. I like that way of looking at it. It certainly gives a brighter picture for the rest of us than, you know, just trying to escape the bad stuff all the time. Though I have to admit, I have done that a lot with romance, reading romance. So sometimes I just want to turn off the TV and quit listening to whatever. And I just want to go where I know that at the end of the day, when I finish that book, I'm going to go, and be happy. And instead of going, why did I turn on the TV?
That's one of my favorite things is when I hear from readers. I just have the most awesome readers in the entire world. And a lot of times I'll hear from them someone who's just gone through a divorce, someone who's had a very, very sick child, someone who's lost their mother or father or worse, people that are suffering with cancer, and they'll write me and say that my books and help them get through a rough time. And that's just an unbelievable compliment. You know, out of everything in this business, to me, that means the most, that you can somehow find a way to make, even in a small way, someone's bad times a little bit better. You know, that's
right.
Just an incredible, it's an incredible, incredible gift for me that someone will tell me that. So those are my favorite times, you know, when someone, you know, I'm an entertainer. So if I've entertained someone and they've been able to put those worries on the back burner just a little bit, makes me feel pretty darn good.
Yeah. And you know, that kind of lends to the whole words are magic. And it's amazing what that, you know, you have a story in your head. You put the words on the paper. You know, it gets published. I read it. And that is magic in and of itself. But then if it helps somebody get through something, you know, that they're struggling with too, then there's even more magic in that. That's just wonderful.
It is. It's very, very wonderful. I've found that just about everybody is struggling with something. Some problems are far worse than others, but when you're the one dealing with it, it can seem pretty bad. If you compare it to someone else's, you'll go, oh, yeah, they've got it worse. But that doesn't make yours any less difficult when you're the one dealing with it. So if you can open up a book, you know, whether it's my book or someone else's, whether it's romance genre or mystery or whatever it is, if you're entertained for a little while and you give yourself a brain break, you know, that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
And lots of mommies need brain breaks, which is why you started reading. So there you go.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yes, it's kind of, and it's funny to hear author stories as I interview authors and how many of them have come into writing, you know, when they were home with their children, because they started reading so much because they had a little bit of that, not so much downtime, but they needed a brain escape, you know, and yeah, it's pretty neat. And so we've got wonderful books out there from all of these people who, they found an escape for themselves. And I'm sure that, do you feel like writing is an escape for you, or is it more of a cathartic thing for you to get it out?
Well, it's both. It's my husband just recently went through 5 knee surgeries, and I thought that I was totally focused on him. I'm sure that I was, as much as I needed to be, you know, trying to help him through things and being at the hospital with him. But somehow I've got 5 books out this year, so I'm in the middle of all that. I must have done a phenomenal amount of writing, so
yeah, right.
It's very much an escape for me. You know, when I was younger and my mother passed away with cancer, she was living with us so that I could take care of her, and that's when I wrote my Buckhorn series, which is it was a very early series. But in between taking care of her and my kids, and my husband's a huge help. You know, if I'm busy, he's busy. He's just a huge help. But, you know, you're going through all that, and all of a sudden I realized I had written a series, you know. So
wow.
And it's very much an escape for me.
Whoa.
So as much as someone might read a book to feel better, I think I write a book to feel better.
Yeah, it's like the double-edged sword for a creative person. You know, you probably do a lot of – do you still do a lot of reading as well?
Oh, I have just been – crazy glomming books lately. I've just been devouring them. I went back and I started rereading. I love historical novels, so I had reread, a bunch of Joanna Lindsay's books, and then I realized that somewhere along the way I had stopped, and I had a whole bunch more in a particular series, the Mallory series, that I could go ahead and read. So I went through those, and then I just got her newest one that was out, Make Me Love You, and so I'm about halfway through that. And then I also read Tani Weber, who's an extremely talented author. She has Call to Honor, Call of Honor, something like that, Call to Honor, I think. Oh, it was so good. Navy SEAL and, you know, just a very sexy, very emotional, just a wonderful book. So I devoured that in almost no time at all. So I've gone through, you know, maybe 10 books in the last 6 weeks. So that's a lot for me, considering how much I write.
Where do you find time?
Lots of reading. Well, you know, here's the thing. I spend all my – I get up early. I'm usually up by 4 in the morning. So this is actually a late call for me. I'm, like, totally zoned here. So if I don't make sense, understand that I've been up since 4 this morning. I don't know why I get up that early. That's just my internal clock now. I just wake up really early. And I get all my emails and you know, online – because authors these days have a lot of online duties, too. You know, you don't just I remember the good old days where you got up and you just wrote, you know, and you answered a letter if it came in the mail, but there wasn't 200 emails to go through and, you know, Facebook and Twitter and all those things. But I enjoy those, too. Those are sort of a break, so I do those things. But so I'm up really early, and I get done with all that. I write until I don't have any more writing. You know, the well runs dry, so you do as much writing as you have in you, and then when you're done with that, then I read for quite a bit, you know, and spend the evening. My husband and I have dinner and sometimes take in a movie, and then I read. So that's my
that's
day.
So nice. I can't wait to kick the kids out of the house and have that time for myself. That'll be awesome.
See, you still have young ones, right?
Yeah, I do.
Mine are all grown. I've got three grandkids now and one more on the way.
Oh, wow. Well, congratulations. That's awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's
is,
when you
is.
Know you've done it right, when you've got the grandkids to play with. So,
yeah, mine are pretty awesome.
So, when you decided to start writing, and was this something that was your husband like, yeah, cool, do that, hey, whatever, or was he you know, kind of like, what do you mean, write?
You know, no, he's always been extremely, extremely supportive. He's my best friend. So when I first started writing, this was back in the Stone Ages, long before computers were around. So the first two books I wrote, I actually wrote longhand with a specific number 2 pencil that I liked. And I had no illusions of ever publishing them because, you know, prior to the internet, you had no idea. It was very difficult to even figure out how to publish a book, you know, who you would send it to, how you would submit it. You know, it was a crazy process back then. So, you know, he was always very supportive of anything I did. And then, you know, when I went to my first writer's conference, and I had already written 2 books at that point, and I met a bunch of people who were, you know, over 5 years were still working on their first chapter, and I thought, well, maybe I can write a book if, you know, because I seem to be turning it out. Not that those first two were any good. They were hideous. But that's how I taught myself to write, was by writing. So, you know, he was all for you. We would walk around the block, you know, take the kids for a walk and talk about what we would do if I ever got published. And, you know, we think back on that sometimes now, you know, sort of laugh about the plans we had back then. But and that was quite a long time ago. My first book was published in 96. So, getting up there. Getting up there in age. In fact, when Worth the Wait comes out, I think Worth the Wait is out, I think, in August. I'm trying to look here real quick. Yeah, Worth the Wait is out in August, and that will be my 100th unique story.
So, awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah.
You're going to have to celebrate that with something fun.
Yeah, we'll do some. Probably a movie, which is what we always do. <You know? laughs> We're not in the adventurous sort. We don't do all, we like to travel, but just, you know, locally. Although I'll be up in Maryland this weekend to be signing at the Nora Roberts Turn the Page bookstore.
Uh-huh.
But other than travel like that, we like to go locally to, you know, Hocking Hills in Ohio or Cumberland Falls in Ohio and places like that. We're not big, you know, distance travelers. Too many
right. cats. That's the author's curse there.
Yeah, I have 5 cats, so yeah, it's tough to travel too far.
I see that you have, talking about being local, that you do a lot of charity work in the area in Ohio where you live. Talk to me a little bit about what's important, you know, what's important to you in those things. I mean, they're different things, but they all have are a worthy cause.
Well, my two biggest places where I focus are children and pets. So there's a local place called the One Way Farm, and it's a local home for abused and abandoned children. And the woman that works there, Barbara Kondo, she's an amazing, amazing person, but it's a devastating job to try to take care of children that other people have hurt, and especially if they're children that have been hurt by the people that should be doing everything they can to protect them. And I have a very difficult time if I hear too many stories, because then I can't sleep for a month. You know, it just upsets me so badly. And so when we started the reader-author get-together, it's a yearly event that I have. It's the beginning of June every year. And we charge $50 for readers, $100 for authors, and all your meals are covered. So that's a Thursday night party. Friday and Saturday is breakfast, lunch, and dinner and parties. And then there's 2 massive book signings. Everybody that attends gets a goodie bag that usually has anywhere between 6 to 8 free books in it, which you can then get signed by the authors who are attending. There's a T-shirt. There's a $10 Barnes & Noble gift card. Barnes & Noble is there on site, so you can buy other books from the authors that are there. I try to keep it around 80 authors because we max out at 500 people total. Well, we do big raffles during that event, and last year I think it was $22,000 we earned from the raffles that we were able to give to the One Way Farm. So, and it's always a significant amount each year that we donate the raffle money to. So I go out of pocket somewhat to keep the event going and keep it affordable for readers and authors so that they can attend, and then we're able to give that really nice check to the place that takes care of local children that are hurt.
Well,
I feel like
awesome.
There are so many needs in the world that if each person took care of their own community, you know, we could make a big impact. So that's what
that's
I try
true.
To do. And then we have the Animal Adoption Foundation, which is a wonderful no-kill animal shelter in my area. And so every year I write a novella where I call it a benefit book, and all the proceeds from the book, the advance and all royalties that are paid go to the Animal Adoption Foundation. So they get the advance. The publisher sends the advance check directly to them. It's a special contract, so everything just goes directly to them. And then whenever the royalties are paid, the royalties are paid directly to them. So
that's
each year
amazing.
I do a new one. Well, I try to help. You know, I care so much about kids, and I care so much about animals, which is how I ended up with 5 cats. And then we care a lot about the troops also, and we try to do as many pet projects with the troops as we can. That comes up quite a bit. But that's usually, you know, different things that come up.
Right, and people have different
stories and things. You know, there's
causes,
they have you know, where they're
things.
Raising money for this or that.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. And I agree with you about that. I think if everybody would concentrate on their local, then we'd all have a nice place to live, you know, your
well,
own
and some
home,
people can
know,
help
your...
more than others. I'm in a unique situation where, like, I can write 1 novella a year to dedicate to the Animal Adoption Foundation. I can organize the event. Not everybody can do that. I know some people go... My son's in banking, and they, as an initiative, will go over and work with the One Way Farm sometimes. They did a garden for them at one point, through donations. Yeah, you know, so there's different things that people can do according to their availability and their finances and their situation in life. A long time ago, I was on a book tour, and I met this wonderful librarian down south somewhere. I can't remember exactly where. She was such a beautiful person, and she told me she remembered when neighbors used to go out and help neighbors paint their houses. Now, so often, they rely on the government to help them with things. But she said it was so nice when it was a community effort, because not only did you go and help, And the person you helped felt good. You felt so good about yourself for having helped. And I think that's true. I think it's such a gift when you do for others. You don't realize how good it will make you feel until you do it. So
yeah,
she and I had a wonderful conversation, and I hope more people. I know so many wonderful people who do so much to help. So I'm not saying people don't, but I'm just saying I don't think people realize how much it helps the giver as much as the one that's getting the gift.
You know? Oh, right. It's good for your soul. I mean, yeah. And like you were saying about, if you think positive, you manifest these things for yourself. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, karma's it works. And
it does.
You build
it
up
really
good karma,
does.
You keep it. Yeah, I agree.
Martin Luther King is my hero, you know, and I love the attitude of, I don't remember the exact quote right now, and I'm sorry I've been up too long, but about you can't fill darkness with more darkness and you can't fix it with hate. You know, you have to bring the better emotions to the situation.
Right.
So I try.
And that is good that, you know, another thing that you do is you have been not a mentor, but a kind of an example to a lot of upcoming writers as well, and giving, you know, the organization or the event that you have is a good thing for authors as well, you know, newer authors or lesser known authors who can get in with some new readers too. So
mm-hmm.
I talked to a couple of other authors who have been in the business for a while, Lori Wild being one of them, you know, and
mm-hmm.
Christy Craig is one of them who, you know, they start to give these hands up and helping out these people who are coming along. And that's another way to kind of, you know, it's like paying it forward. You know that somebody along the way gave you a little bit of a boost, and then you help somebody out in advance or, you know, before they need it kind of thing. So
this is very true. It's very true. And, you know, the industry has changed so much. There's a lot of times new authors will contact me and ask me questions about the process. I can't help with that because the process has changed so much. You know,
right.
I don't even know what the process is anymore. Back when I started, you had to print out a manuscript and mail it to Canada and then wait a year to hear from anybody. And if you got a postcard in the mail just saying they received it, that was huge.
Yeah.
So now you email things off, and, you know, it's just a much, much different process. I'm always happy to give advice on things that I can give advice on, but the process is not one that I know anymore. And, of course, it's different for me now not being a new author than it would be for someone who is a new author. You know, I don't go through the same steps that a new author would have to go
True.
Through.
True.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, that's
You'd
not something I
can
usually help with. Yeah. it's true. Yeah, you got to earn your stripes, you know, and it's just very, very different. So I wish I could help more, because that's generally what I hear from authors is, you know, what is the process?
Yeah.
I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know how it goes anymore. Not for a new author, but I do try to help in other ways when I can.
What advice would you give to somebody who, you know, you talked about meeting the people who still were working on their first chapter after 5 years and things like that? What kind of advice would you give out to them?
You know, it's for me, it's advice for life is nothing gets done by committee. You have to make those decisions yourself. I see so many people that are in long-term writing groups, and I'm sure for some people it does work. I can only speak from my experiences and what works and doesn't work for me and what I've witnessed. But anytime you're writing a chapter and then passing it around to five people and waiting for their feedback, you're never going to get done, because you're never going to make those five people. If I write a finished book and it hits the New York Times and the USA Today and Publishers Weekly, I'm still going to find some people that hated that book. You know, I mean, that's just a fact. But when you're trying to get feedback from a writing group on your book, it just makes it extremely difficult. It's like you take two steps forward and two steps back. So, you know, my advice to people would always be to write an entire book, and then if you want to get some feedback from people, you can. Just don't take that advice too much to heart. If someone gives you advice on the book and it doesn't make sense to you, and you don't think, wow, that's a good point, don't do
mm-hmm.
it, because the person giving you that advice can't buy your book. Only an editor can buy your book, and
right.
what one person likes, another person hates. The only person you have to make happy in the beginning is yourself, and then you have to make an editor happy. If an editor asks you to change something, by all means, change it.
Right.
Do what you got to do to sell that book. But if just your critique group tells you to, you know, if they're pointing out obvious things, you know, you switched point of view when you shouldn't have, or you've got massive typos or bad grammar, you have to fix those things. But if they're saying, well, I just didn't think your protagonist was sympathetic enough, that's very subjective. You know,
true.
If you as the writer felt like that they were sympathetic enough, then you leave it alone because it's your book. I don't remember who it was that explained it to me this way. You know, like Stella Cameron or Jane Ann Krentz, one of them, they used to give me some great advice when I was newer. But they say, you know, if you've got a piece of wood and you're looking at it and it's got the little pits and the grain and everything's interesting in it, and if you keep polishing it and polishing it and polishing it till it looks like a piece of glass, everybody can have that piece of glass. It's those unique grain in the wood that makes it interesting. Well, as many people are trying to get published, the only thing you have unique going for you as a writer is your voice. So if it's a voice by committee, it's no longer a unique voice.
So that makes a lot of sense.
That makes clear. I hope it does. I hope I'm not rambling too much.
No, it makes
a lot of
sense.
I'm kind of all over the place. Good.
I know you're sleep deprived. I'm sorry. We won't keep you up too late. That makes a lot of sense. And I do think a lot of people get bogged down in thinking that they've got to just keep forcing it into a box where it's not going to fit because it's just not meant to be there. The story needs to be itself. So I do that. I know I do that. So I end up deleting a whole bunch of stuff and go, why did I do that? So
I think you can over-edit yourself, you know, if you keep editing and editing. And, you know, part of it is because writers, myself included, are notoriously insecure about their work. So if someone gives you advice on it, you know, you think, oh, I got to fix that too, and I've got to fix this, and I've got to fix it one more time, and if I send it out, there's a chance it's going to get rejected. Well, odds are it's going to get rejected, so send it out. Send it out, another book. Yeah, I remember I got so many rejections when I first started out, and each one just made me more determined to get published. I saw other authors who were just really devastated by it, but each rejection I got, I wanted to sell very, very badly, of course, but each rejection I got just made me feel like I'm going to sell that next one and show them all. So, I just had that, positive attitude where I was going to make it work somehow.
That's funny. Your kids didn't ever watch anime, did they? That just reminds me of
my middle son does. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it reminds me of Naruto. My daughter's making me binge watch Naruto with her, and he's like that. He's very determined. It's funny because as a writer, and I've been writing romance, and then I go watch these things with my daughter, and I'm pulling like character traits from these characters, and I'm like, that would be a great person in a book, even though it's really over the top here. It'd be great here in this story.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny. It's hilarious.
Well, that's
so
when people ask you where you get your inspiration. So you see, that's one of the places you get inspired. Right?
Yeah, I got it from anime. So
there you go.
So let's talk a little bit. We're about the halfway mark, and I'm going to put the phone number out if anybody wants to call in, and we're going to talk a little bit about your the latest books, the ones that just came out in the new series.
Sure.
The phone number is 347-633-9609, and I've been authorized to give away a copy or maybe a couple of copies by your publicist of Under Pressure. And so let's just start off by talking a little bit about that. And that is part of you have a new series that came out. The first one came out recently, and then came out. And then you have another one coming out next month, I think. Is that correct? I'm like thinking backwards. Okay.
I can't keep track either. So Under Pressure just came out. This is the Body Armor series. And it's, I had the Ultimate series, which was MMA fighters, and I get bored easily, so I wanted to move away from MMA, and one of the characters was very accommodating and decided that he was a good fighter, but he was never going to be a championship fighter, so he, you know, he didn't want to be second best. So he decided to try a different career, which was a bodyguard. And little by little, the other guys who, for different reasons, are also becoming bodyguards with him. So the first one out was Under Pressure, which just released. And that's Lisa's story, Lise Phelps. He appeared in the other books, initially not as a very nice guy. And
okay.
I don't really dictate to my characters. They sort of do their own thing. I mean, I literally sit down with a story blind and just start writing and see what happens. And luckily it works out for me. But so Lise throughout the original series, the Ultimate series, became a nicer guy. I thought he was going to maybe be the villain at first, but he became a nicer guy. And by the end of the book, he was actually a pretty good guy. Then in the next book, he was an even better guy. And then to, you know, right up until he became the hero in the book. So it's his book. And he's got a lot of baggage because of the type of person he used to be. And I just loved him. I thought he really did a nice change in his characterization, you know, where he became a much, much more heroic person. Not every character can be the hero. You know, some characters just remain secondary characters. And some
right.
step up and say, here, write my book. This is what I'm going to do. And that's what Lise did. So it was a really, really fun story to write. What I've heard from readers is that the villain is one of the creepiest villains they've ever read, which is fun. You know, if you're going to write a villain, might as well go all out. And so I hope when readers try it, they like it. And then Hard Justice comes out in March, end of March, I think. Let me see. I'll tell you exactly. March 21st. I'm on my website, so I have to click and see. March 21st. And that'll be Justice's story. And he's like a big heavyweight fighter. So, and then I'm writing Miles's story. And Miles will be out in December. And then the fourth book will be Fast Burn. That's Brand's story. And that'll be out in April of 2018.
And so is it just going to be a four-part series?
As far as I know,
so far.
As of right now, yeah, as
so
of
far.
Right now, that's what it'll be. Yeah, the characters only tell me so much. Like I know,
right.
I knew before I started Miles' story a little bit about what was going to happen with him, and now that I'm writing Miles' story, I know a little bit about what will happen with Brand, but I don't know, you know, I wouldn't be able to tell you yet because I haven't gotten there.
Do you have a place where you go write and you, a certain, do you have to listen to certain music or you, can you just pretty much do anything by now?
I can't do anything. I wish I could do anything. You know, I can write anywhere that I have to write, but by far my preference is I have a desk at home that faces out to our backyard where we've got a fairly big pond and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'll see the deer out there and the fish jumping in the pond and the birds and, so I like facing nature, and then we have a small lake house, and my desk faces the lake, so I can see the fishermen going by and the birds, the geese, you know, the nature that's out there. So that's my two favorite places is when I can face the window and see the nature that's happening around me, and the water. I'm a big water fan.
Water fan. And
yes.
You probably you have some you have lakes up there. And do you ever get down to the coast and come on the coast?
You know, I've been to Florida a few times, but I don't get to ocean. Sorry, I was letting two cats out that decided they wanted to go out. If one goes
like
out, his brother follows him.
That's yeah. Right.
You know, well, they go out, and then they immediately want right back in again. So we have a boat. You know, I prefer lakes. We get out on the boat or the Sea-Doo and swim and go down to there's a beach at the lake and, you know, go down in the sand with the grandkids. But I don't get to the actual beach, you know, ocean beaches very often. We've been up to, what was the Great Lake I was just up at? One of the Great Lakes I was just up at. That was really nice. That's like looking at an ocean. And we went to Mackinac Island and, you know, that was fantastic. That was like being on the ocean. So, you know, I enjoy that, but like I said, we don't travel very far because of having cats. So it takes a little while. You know, we not only have five cats, but we catch and fix the feral cats. So when I get up at 4 a.m, there's usually 20 cats on the porch. They're
good
not,
grief.
You know, they, I know, isn't it ridiculous? They'll step far enough away that I wouldn't be able to catch them if I wanted to, and only a fool would try to catch a feral cat. But I mean, with their hands. But I feed them, and they run over to eat. And we've caught, there's a few we still need to catch, but we catch them, and then we get them fixed so they can't continue to breed, you know, get their shots mm-hmm. and get their ears checked and all that sort of thing while the vet goes
right.
and dope up. And then we just turn them loose, and that almost guarantees they're never going to leave, you know.
Yeah,
so
right.
But they're not breeding anymore, so that's a good thing.
They're just eating.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, in the book I'm writing right now, the girl inherits her grandmother's place, which is overrun with cats. And so she, you know, it's. I figured I might as well write that in since I know so much about it.
How often do you find your real life or things you find in life invading your books?
Well, you know, I pick up on headlines quite a bit. And, you know, obviously embellish them sometimes, you know, and twist and turns to make them work for me. But I'm a big news junkie. I watch the news quite a bit. Well, you know, in the morning I watch the news. And when I start writing, I turn on my music. But, you know, from 4 until about 8 or 9 o'clock, I'm listening to the news. I'm you know, the world's a crazy place, so I like to know what's going on. It's a crazy, wonderful place. Let's put it that way.
Sometimes
from headlines.
Sometimes real life is stranger than fiction too, so you can pick up on some good stuff.
Well, and that's the absolute truth. There are certain things you could write that nobody would believe because they would say it was too bizarre. You know, so you always have to temper it a little bit to make it, you know, believable enough that people don't think that you. If they see it in the news, they'll believe it. If you write it, they're going to say that was too crazy. So. But I do that, and you know, I have, like I said, I have 3 grown sons, so a lot of the funny dialogue you'll hear my male characters say is probably stuff my boys have said. They're all 3 pretty heroic guys, and they got their dad's sense of humor. They are absolutely hilarious. They keep me cracking up whenever they're around. So whenever there's witty banter, you can always wonder if one of my boys said it or their dad. And that's as
that's
far
funny.
As I go with drawing parallels between my heroes because I write fairly sexy books, and so I don't,
yeah.
you know, it, none of that is related to my boys at all. But, you know, I don't know anything about that part of their lives. But the funny banter and the heroic behavior is definitely them.
Do you when you wrote the MMA series? Were you watching MMA fighting, or did you have to go do a lot of research for that?
No, we've actually been MMA fans since its inception, ages ago, when it was, you know, no holds barred and really, really brutal.
Right.
You know, my sons were all wrestlers, so they were all into contact sports anyway. And I remember they were wanting to watch MMA one time, and my husband had it on, and I saw it, and it looked awful. And I said, no, absolutely not. They're not watching that, blah, 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 blah. And I thought they turned it off, but they did not. And I came back in on a different one and actually got it just drawn into it. So the one that I had seen turned into be a really bloody one, which was from a cut on the forehead. Now, foreheads bleed like crazy, so the fight wasn't that bad. It looked so bloody and gruesome. You know, it's actually a very, very safe sport. And so then once I got involved, I became a big fan too. So the whole family is just a big MMA fan. We love the UFC, and there was a local competition around here, Turf Wars, we used to go to all the time to watch. And so it's a very interesting, it's probably the closest thing to wrestling, you know.
Yeah.
And since
That's we
were such wrestling fans, it was a fit.
I feel
like
you
good thing
had
I had boys,
to,
right?
Yeah, right. I feel like you had to turn to romance just because there was like zero estrogen in your house or something. But it was like,
boy,
you know.
That is the truth. Yeah, because I've got, you know, I've got the 3 sons, and then I've got 3 grandsons. Now, my
newest grandbaby
that's on the way is supposed to be a girl, so we'll see.
Oh, well, keeping my fingers crossed for you on that one. You need some,
there you go.
You need some girl time.
Right.
That's funny. All of your books, I mean, at least in the last few years, have had that element of suspense with that your alpha male-ish characters and things. What do you think about suspense and romance? Do you think that... I think that the two increase the tension between the characters and all of that. It certainly gives you more conflict. But what do you think so romantic? I mean, I really think there's something powerful about romantic suspense. What do you think about that being so romantic? Is it the danger or?
Well, you know, for me, it would probably be the alpha male getting to be an alpha male, which I'm a huge fan of that sort of thing. So even if the woman is an extremely independent, very, very capable woman, which I don't know why we'd want to write someone who wasn't, guys, it's always fun to see the guy get to step up and be the complete and total badass guy. You know, the guy that would – I know when I wrote Fighting Dirty, there was a scene where the girl's bank was getting robbed. She was a banker. And Army stepped – the guy was going to shoot the girl, and Army, the male character, stepped in front of her. He would have taken the bullet for her. It's not that she had fallen apart, but that he would have taken that bullet for her. He ended up not having to because he was a hero, and we don't kill heroes. But, you know, I think in romantic suspense, that's the ultimate – you know, that he loves her so much he would die for her. A lot of times that she loves him so much she would die for him, you know, that they even think about it. So to me, that's what's – everything's on the line. You love someone enough, everything's on the line. So that's, I think, is what's so awesome about romantic suspense.
Yeah,
at
I
least
agree.
For me.
Alpha males are just awesome. And I hear, you know, they people knock them all the time because, you know, strong women don't want to admit that an alpha male's hot, but you can be a strong. I agree. You have strong female characters that are very independent. They can take care of themselves, but you can still have a good alpha male character, and they can still be attracted to each other, and it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly. There's nothing wrong with people need to be whoever they are. You know, if a woman is a shark in business and she's a go getter and That's her business. If she wants to be that way, she can be that way. If a woman is happy being at home raising three kids, that's her business. If she wants to do both and she's got the energy for it, that's her business. That's how I feel about it. And I feel the exact same way about men. You know, I mean,
yeah.
I think people have to live who they are. And personally, I think there's way too many people that are offended too easily these days. You know, people need to lighten up and use that positive attitude and just roll a little bit, you know, and stop worrying about being so offended.
And especially since it's fiction anyways. Come on, people. It's fiction. So it's just too,
yeah,
like
I mean, I've had a few people that
took
offense at things that blew me away because I never would have thought it was offensive. And, you know, my first reaction is always to say, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean for it to be offended. And if they're still offended, I was like, eh, you know, I don't know what to say. Pick a different book. You know?
Right.
You know, you can't change the way you write for individuals.
Right.
It has to be for your audience. And like I said, the number one person you have to please is yourself. You know, if you're writing the book that you love, that's the most important part. And then you go from there.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, because if you're writing if you're trying to write a book for somebody else, it's never going to come across as authentic.
No,
it's
and you're just
going to
be miserable doing it. You know, if you're not having fun doing this, don't do it. You know, there are easier ways to make money. There are certainly harder ways to make money. The best part about writing is you get to love what you're doing, and if you're not loving it, it's probably not the job for you.
Right? I agree. So what else do you have? You've obviously got the book coming out, and you said on the 21st of March. What else do you got? I mean, you've got the other two in the series coming out. Do you have other plans for to work on other series or new plans?
June, I'll have the benefit book where all the money goes to the animal shelter. That's going to be called a Buckhorn Baby. So I've been tying – I started a Buckhorn series ages and ages ago, and it's probably one of my most popular series. And so I don't know, 4 or 5 books ago, started adding to that family line for my benefit books just to make sure that the books sold really well for the animal shelter since it's a popular series. So that'll be out in June. And then in August, Worth the Wait, which has one of my favorite covers ever on it, as part of a trade series with, with the Guthrie Brothers series. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I got to take a drink real quick. I'm talking too much.
That's okay. Go ahead.
So that will be the first book was Don't Tempt Me, and then Worth the Wait. Don't Tempt Me had Jason, and then his brother Hogan is in Worth the Wait. So brother books.
Okay. So you've got a lot coming out this year then. That's good.
Yeah, like I said, it was a crazy busy year. I don't know how that quite happened that way. My husband had a knee replacement, and it was one complication after another. So he ended up with 5 knee surgeries in a very short
time. Oh, my.
Yeah, so it was pretty harrowing, and a lot of time in and out of the hospital and a lot of time recovering. He's doing okay now. But, it was a rough year. And somehow, like I said, that's my escape. So I must have, you know, whenever things were okay, I must have just been really churning away, I guess.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the time, and I want to make sure that everybody can find you. I know you have a fantastic website. Let's talk about a little bit about your website. You've got so many fun things on here, your games and downloads and all sorts of things. Tell us about do you have somebody who suggests things for your website, or do you come up with fun things by yourself?
Well, some things I came up with. Some things readers have requested, so I've tried to do for them. Wax Creative does my website, and they do a phenomenal job. Because I have so many series, I've tried to very clearly mark the books. If every book I write stands alone. I don't write any book where you have to read the other books in order to follow along. But,
right.
But a lot of times readers want to know which book came first, you know, which book will be next. And so if you go to my webpage and you click on the book link, there'll be a drop down, and you can always just go to Connected Books. And when you get to the Connected Books page, it'll tell you the Body Armor series, the Guthrie Brothers series, Ultimate series, Love Undercover. You know, you can click on any one of those, and it'll tell you all the books that are in the series, the names of the main characters that were in it, the other books that are related to it, you know, to try to make it easy. And then I also have it broke down with new books and reissues. For 2017, the publisher is putting out 14 reissued books. So it can get very confusing. I know. And then, that's just Harlequin. And then my past publishers, you know, Berkeley and Kensington, they do reissues as well. So it gets really, really busy with reissues. So by trying to mark them very clearly, if it's a reissue or a new book, hopefully that helps readers not to rebuy the same book twice. If they haven't read it, by all means, and they think they want it, that's awesome. But I don't like when readers feel like they've bought the same book twice because they didn't realize it was a reissue. You know, I don't want to do that to anybody.
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times when they've got new covers, and I'm like, oh, that's neat. Have I read this one? Bought it. Nope, same thing.
Sometimes you don't recognize the title, and you'll be 10 pages in before you realize it's a book you already read. You know, I mean, at least I will be, and I'll think, wait a minute, this seems familiar.
And I have to give you props to any author who puts a printable book list on their website. Thank you from all the librarians in the world. We appreciate that.
I try.
Because that is one of the biggest reference questions in fiction is, do you know what all the books are from this author? It's like, let me just print this.
Yeah.
Here you go.
I try.
Keep
it. I really do. Well, you can imagine back before we had computers how difficult that was. People don't know how easy they've got it just being able to research anything. I remember going into a bookstore and saying, do you know when the next Catherine Coulter book is coming out? Do you know when the next Joanna Lindsay book is? Because I guess I love historical. And, you know, you literally had to make a trip to the bookstore to find out. You couldn't just pull it up on your computer.
Would you ever consider writing a historical?
Oh, you know, I would so love to, but I have absolutely no talent in that area. You know, I'm lousy at history, so if I'm entertained, I pay no attention to it. I could be reading a historical novel, and then in the middle of a joust, if they drove through with a Mercedes, if it worked for the romance, I wouldn't care. But historical readers, many of them, not me, but many of them are very particular. If somebody's got a pocket watch, you know, 2 years before pocket watches were invented, they'll pick up on it. I don't. You know, like I said, I'm just into the story. But I do know that there's an awful lot of really, really intelligent people out there that really know their history, and I'm sure I would just be eviscerated if I if I tried to fake what little I know. It would people would definitely pick up on it. So, wish I could.
I love reading them too, and I'm one of those people that I'm a pick-aparter because I love history, and
really? Yeah,
and it's funny that you say that because I've done that before. I've been like, wait a minute, this is not right. And I don't think I could ever write it, though. I think it's just entirely so much work, and I don't know if I could do it justice. So
that's the thing. To me, that's some of the biggest talent out there is when you can write an historical romance and the language is correct and the clothing is correct and none of it feels overpowering because it's about romance. You know,
right?
I'm just in awe of people that can do that. Now, I was reading an historical romance the other day, and the hero said to the heroine, sure. And I'm thinking, did they say that back then?
Right. No, they didn't.
Did they use it that way? I mean, I don't know. It just came across really modern to me, so I don't know.
But
not
see,
like
I'm
something we would
person
say now,
that
sure.
immediately, yeah, I immediately go Google it. I'm like, I gotta find out. I'm going to go find out because that just really bugged me, you know. So, I agree.
Yeah. I did that moment of wonder, and then I flipped the page to see what else was going on. So, see, I don't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But I do, I just love, you know, Jane Ann Krentz when she writes as Amanda Quick. You know, Scandal was one of my all-time favorites. Julie Garwood, all of hers. Honor Splendor was one of my all-time favorite books. Lion's Lady. And then, like I said, the Joanna Lindsays with the Mallory brothers that led into the Anderson brothers. And Catherine Coulter with the Sherbrooke series. Those are my favorite books. I just absolutely, they're like old friends, and I revisit them every so often.
Well, that's awesome. It's nice to hear that authors reread books. So
I reread
it. It makes the world complete.
Yeah.
So back to your website. You have at the very top, they can subscribe to your newsletter. And do you have a monthly thing, or is it just when you have something come out? How do you work?
It's mostly once a month. But if I have a book that's just releasing, a lot of times I'll send a little quick notice, you know, to let people know. And then I try to remind people that on my Facebook page, I do giveaways pretty much every day. And then I have what I call Thankful Thursday, where I make it a much bigger giveaway. I appreciate my readers so, so much, and I desperately want them all to know how much I appreciate them. So every Thursday I do a bigger giveaway, usually 5 or 6 books and a tote bag, sometimes a T-shirt, sometimes a gift card, you know, all together. So that's my Thankful Thursday.
Awesome. Well, then they need to check out your Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/Lori Foster.
Yes, facebook.com/Lori Foster.
And anybody that's listening, you can go to her website at LoriFoster.com. All of her social media links that I've linked onto this page where you're listening to the show are also linked there. And you can find out about the reader-author get-together if you're interested in joining that. So that's pretty fun, too.
Right.
And when is that? That's like in the summer?
It's in June. And registration for that will be March 1st at, I believe, 1 p.m. EST, Eastern Time. Because we max out. Last year, it was in under an hour, all 500 spots were taken. So people really have to be ready to go when registration opens if they want in. And I know
that
seems
really
insane, but I have a database set up. So once 540 people, because we max out at 500, but I initially take 540 people because that many people will cancel, you know, before the event actually gets there. But it literally, the database shut down in just under an hour because we had maxed out all of those spots. It just goes really, really fast. And the event will be the 8th, 9th, and 10th of June.
Okay. Awesome.
And
well,
the book
that's great
signings,
that it sells out.
The book signings are 3 to 5, and they're open to the public. So
if somebody doesn't want
to make the whole event. I'm sorry, go ahead.
They don't have to go to the whole event just to come to the book signings?
Right. The book signings are open to the public, so anybody can stop in just for the book signings. You know, for anything other than the book signings, you have to have your name badge, you know, proving that you've registered. But anybody can stop into the book signings. Karen Marie Monning's going to be there. Diana Love. I don't think Karen Rose isn't making it this year. Jill Shalvis. So there's, you know, it's a good lineup. The authors are all listed on my website.
Fantastic.
Laura Lee. Laura Lee is going to be there. Yeah.
Oh yay! She's supposed to be on my show sometime. I'm not sure when yet, but so that's exciting.
It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, I love her books too. Well, thank you so much for being on, and good luck with everything this year. Hopefully you get some downtime after all the hospital time. That's, you know, definitely need downtime from that.
Thank you. And if anybody's in the Boonesboro area, I'll be signing at Turn the Page.
Okay. There you go. And your events are all on
thank
your website,
you.
Too. So.
Yes, everything's on the website under events.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again. It's really been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. And you'll find me scoping you out on Facebook and stalking you, so I'll wave at you.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Thank you very, very much.
All right. You have a lovely evening. And
thank you.
Sleep.
You too. I'm heading there right now.
Okay.
All right. Take care.
All right. You too. And thanks, everybody, for being here tonight and listening in our conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. You can find me on Facebook at The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'm on Twitter at @HOT_librarian_. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be found online at www.authorsairon.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and you know, just about anywhere else you can think of. And I will see you all next Thursday for a doubleheader on the 9th. Until then, have sweet dreams, and I'll see you next Thursday.